Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, October 15th, 2025. We begin our reading on the front page. Disbandment of Paxton's Federated Church. The time had come. With disbandment of church, funds distributed to nonprofits. Paxton. It's a difficult thing when a church dissolves. The church is more than bricks and mortar. It's people, many of whom grew close to one another through good times and some not so good. That's the case with the Federated Church, a Paxton-based house of worship that dissolved during the summer. Jim Niewald, church moderator, moderator is akin to congregation president, said it's been a difficult time for those who have attended the church for years, especially not seeing the people you were used to seeing. Some good, however, has come out of the church disbandment. Money donated to the church, which held its final service in July, and a trust set up by a deceased member of the church, has resulted in the distribution of a sizable amount of funds to local charities and churches. Niewald said $300,000 that was donated to the church was distributed to several nonprofits. Funds totaling an additional $400,000 from the Pearl Bobo Trust have also been distributed to 10 churches as per terms of the trust. Mrs. Bobo and her husband were prominent business people in the Ford County community. We knew at some time it might come, Newell said of the closing, but we were hoping we could grow out of it. We just decided now is the time. Average attendance was only 10 or 11. Newall said the church was unique in some ways. The church had money, which wasn't an issue, but membership had sagged over the years. Another issue was that the Federated Church's pastor, who served part-time, retired in January, and church leadership was informed that there was little chance it would find a part-time or interim minister to fill the pulpit on a consistent basis. Prior to that, it got to where it took 3 or 4 years to find another full-time minister, Niewald said. Neither denomination had anybody in mind that could serve as an interim minister who intentionally served during that interim period. We decided the time had come. Camelin Johnson Anderson, whose family was part of the Federated Church congregation for many years, said members showed their love and concern when her late husband, Dale Johnson, was diagnosed with cancer. For 15 months, the small church provided meals for the family every weekday until Mr. Johnson's passing in June of 2007. My kids were active in all kinds of things, all three of them, Anderson said. I was trying to be there for them, and they wanted me to be there for them, and I was working full time. Sometimes we had so much food left over we would have leftovers for the weekend. That's the character of my church. Not only did members provide meals, they tried to be at many of the Johnson children's extracurricular activities to show their support. Anderson said often they would all sit in one section at a school event. Comprising the Federated Church were two local congregations that decided to meet in the same building in 1923. A local congregational congregation, and a Presbyterian congregation. Apparently, even back then, both churches were having declining membership, Niewald said, and we think for a while they met separately in the same church and decided they should just join and have one minister. Despite the consolidation, members continued to belong to one congregation or the other, Niewald saying the congregations were fairly similar. He described the style of worship as traditional. The West Center Street Church building was the original home for the Congregational Church. Niewald said it is believed to be the oldest church building in Ford County. He described its architecture as typical New England Congregational Church building. It was built in 1865. The church was completely remodeled in 1914, and part of that work included raising the building and horses being used to pull drag scoops to build a basement for a meeting fellowship hall. They sloped the floors, Newell said. That's when the stained glass windows were installed, as it was a stucco interior. The original exterior consisted of New England clapboard siding. Additional remodeling took place in the 1940s and 1950s. Prior to the forming of the Federation, the Presbyterian congregation met in a building on Home Street. It later built a church on the corner of State and American Streets. That building, which was sold to the Nazarene congregation, was later destroyed by fire. The Nazarenes built a new church building there later. For several years, the corner lot beside the Federated Church held the Shaw Mansion. Newall said the church used that building for Sunday school classes and a minister's study in the 1960s and 70s. At one point in that time frame, there were over 100 in Sunday school classes, Newall said. The Federated Church property, including the buildings and the corner lot, were sold to the neighboring First United Methodist Church for a nominal amount. They appreciate the history of the building and wish to continue to use it for religious purposes. Both congregations viewed this opportunity as a win-win. It kept us from having to sell or dispose of the historic building, wasting precious funds that are now able to be used for positive purposes in the community. In a history of the church, it was noted that local settlers and pioneers of both denominations originally held gatherings in homes. One group met south of Paxton, shepherded by the Reverend Granger, who traveled there from Urbana. The church later organized and on January 16, 1858, became the Union Church of Christ in the Middle Fork of the Vermilion River, later to be known as the Congregational Church of Paxton. The Presbyterian group originally met at 10 Mile Grove west of Paxton, or at the McFarland Farm and School southwest of Loda as early as 1856. The church was received into the presbytery at Bloomington on October 3, 1859. The frame was raised for the Congregational Church on August 24, 1865, likely the first church building in Paxton and likely Ford County. Until 1861, the Presbyterians met in Hanley or Patton Hall and later held services in the county courthouse. In 1867, the Presbyterian congregation built and began worshiping in their new church building on West Home Street. A windstorm destroyed the church spire in 1890. The spire was never replaced. The Presbyterians built a new church home on West State Street in 1900 and met there until the Federation was formed with the Congregational Church in 1923. It was noted in the history of the church that many in the community didn't think the merging of two congregations into one building would work. They believed one church would soon absorb the other, according to history, which also noted that one point involving real sacrifice on the part of many United Presbyterians was the complete abandoning of their church building. In the funds being distributed, the following groups received funds being contributed by the Federated Church. This list does not include funds distributed from the Bobo Trust. The United Church of Christ, the Presbytery of Southeastern Illinois, United Methodist Church of Paxton, the One Great Hour of Sharing, Undue Medical Debt, Convoy of Hope, Paxton Daycare Center, the PBL Education Foundation, the Paxton Area Ministerial Association for Christmas Baskets, the Hands of Christ Food Bank, the PBL Food Pantry, Sleep in Heavenly Peace, the Paxton Boy Scouts, the Paxton Girl Scouts, the Robert Rolfing FFA Memorial Scholarship Fund, the Ford County Historical Society, the Paxton Foundation, the Ford Iroquois 4-H Foundation, Paxton Park District, the Paxton Carnegie Library, and the PBL Backpack Program. Back on the front page, we have from the Ford County Board, farm leases approved via 10-2 votes. Highest bidder from Gibson City awarded 3-year leases for all 3 community-owned, county-owned farms. Paxton, During a Ford County Board meeting dominated by budget discussions, the seemingly never-ending debate over the use of the three county-owned farms was unusually brief Monday night, and put to an end, too, at least for the next few years. With all 12 members present, the board achieved the supermajority of 9 affirmative votes it needed to accept the highest bids received for the cash rent leasing of the farms for crop production for the next 3 years. All 3 leases were awarded to M&M Grains, LLC of Gibson City, with Cindy Erkey of Rural Roberts and Leslie King of Piper City the only board members in dissent on each of the 3 10-2 votes. M&M Grains submitted a bid of $319 per acre for the 104.54-acre Ford County Nursing Home Farm, also known as Farm 1, in Patton Township, far higher than the only other bid received for that farm, $230 an acre, from Zach Bunting of Gibson City. Meanwhile, M&M of Grains submitted bids of $306 per acre, the only bids received, for both the 146.6-acre Bowen Grider Farm, or Farm 2, and the 118.6 tillable acres of the 156.67-acre Hatfield Bowen Farm, or Farm 3, in Button Township. Approval occurred with no discussion immediately following the opening of the sealed bids by Chairman Chase McCall of Gibson City. As a result of the approval, the second agenda item calling for a vote to redo the bidding process became moot. The expedient action was in stark contrast with the lengthy back and forth that took up much of last month's meeting, when the board lacked the affirmative votes to accept bids received for the proposed 5-year leases. All 3 votes failed via 8-3 margins, with Carson Vaughn of Paxton absent, and with Tom McQuinn of Rural Paxton joining Erkey and King in dissent. As a result of the board members' concerns about the proposed 5-year term length for each lease, the board agreed to redo the bidding process, this time for proposed 3-year leases instead. Immediately after the board accepted the 3-year lease bids, board member Greg Niewald of Rural Loda, chairman of the board's farm committee, pointed out that, as he expected, the bids came in at lower amounts this second go-round, likely due to higher projected costs resulted from the reduction of discounts of inputs such as seeds. The highest bids received last month came from Miranda Purcell of Gibson City, wife of Nick Purcell, who currently is leasing all 3 farms through the end of November. Miranda Purcell submitted a bid of $382 per acre for Farm 1, $353 per acre for Farm 2, and $355 for Farm 3. "We just threw tens of thousands of dollars in the trash," Niewald noted. The new 3-year leases run from December 1, 2025 through November 30, 2028. In addition to the annual per acre lease payment, the tenant must pay the farm's annual property tax bills. Some board members, including Erkey, have repeatedly opposed the county's traditional use of the farms for agricultural production, arguing the land should instead be open for public use, potentially through its enrollment into the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Conservation Reserve Program. However, last month, the board rejected proposed CRP lease language and decided not to move forward with seeking bids for nonprofits for serving as the operator of one of the farms upon CRP enrollment. Niewald said he was concerned about the liability exposure to the county in the event of injury or accident by those using the land for outdoor recreation activities like hunting, hiking, or bird watching. Through the end of November, all 3 farms are being leased for crop production by Nick Purcell. In March, the board voted 9-1 to accept Purcell's $320 per acre bid for Farm 3 for just this crop season. Purcell had already been farming the other 2 farms under 2-year cash rent leases that went into effect in January 2024 at $410 per acre for Farm 1 and $300 $380 per acre for Farm 2. We turn to page 2 for a warning from the Ford County Public Health Department. Residents warned of Medicare scams ahead of open enrollment. Paxton. Ahead of the Medicare open enrollment period of October 15th to December 7th, the Ford County Public Health Department warned Medicare beneficiaries in the area to be on the lookout for scammers who are trying to steal personal information and commit fraudulent billing. Medicare open enrollment is a crucial period for seniors to review their health and prescription drug plans, and unfortunately, it's also a prime season for fraudsters, Miller said in a news release. We urge all our residents to be vigilant and protect their personal and financial information, knowing the most common scams is the first line of defense. Miller highlighted 3 Medicare scams to look out for. The Medicare imposter unsolicited call scam. What it is. Scammers call claiming to be from Medicare or a government agency and state that you need to verify your Medicare number, Social Security number, or bank information to receive a new card and update your file, or avoid losing coverage. These calls often use fake caller ID to look legitimate or may use high-pressure tactics. The red flag. Medicare does not call you uninvited and will never call you to ask for your Medicare or Social Security number. How to protect yourself. Hang up immediately. If you need to call Medicare, use the official number, 800-MEDICARE. That's 800-633-4227. The generic testing and free medical equipment fraud. What it is. Fraudsters offer free medical supplies, equipment like back or knee braces, or genetic cardiovascular testing kits in exchange for your Medicare number. They claim the items are fully covered by Medicare. They then use your number to fraudulently bill Medicare for expensive, unnecessary, or unreceived items or services. The red flag. Be skeptical of unsolicited offers of free medical items or tests. Do not give your Medicare number to anyone offering a free product. How to protect yourself. Only accept medical equipment or services that are ordered by your personal physician. If you receive medical equipment you did not order, refuse the delivery or contact the supplier to arrange a return. High-pressure enrollment and Medicare Advantage plan switch scams. What it is. Scammers, often posing as official Medicare agents, pressure you to enroll in a Medicare Advantage Part C or Part D plan, sometimes promising too-good-to-be-true benefits, like preloaded cash card or free groceries. They may misrepresent benefits, switch you into a plan without your full consent, or use illegal incentives. The red flag. Legitimate agents cannot call you out of the blue to market a new plan unless you are already a client or have given them permission. They are also prohibited from offering gifts or cash to entice you to enroll. How to protect yourself. Only work with licensed agents you have chosen and do not fall for high-pressured sales tactics. Carefully review any plan details before enrolling. Compare plans yourself at Medicare.gov or call 800-MEDICARE. Crucial tips for all beneficiaries. 1. Treat your Medicare card like a credit card. Guard your Medicare number carefully. Only share it with your personal health care providers and other trusted officials. 2. Review your statements. Check your Medicare summary notices, MSNs, or explanation of benefits, EOBs, for services or equipment you did not receive or that your daughter did not order. Hang up on unsolicited calls. If someone calls you uninvited and asks for your Medicare number, hang up. It is a scam. 4. Report suspected fraud. If you suspect Medicare fraud or abuse, take action immediately. Call 800-MEDICARE, that's 800-633-4227, to report it. Contact the Federal Trade Commission to report the scam at reportfraud.ftc.gov. The Ford County Public Health Department is committed to protecting the health and well-being of all our residents, which includes safeguarding them from financial and medical fraud, Miller said. Please share this information with friends, families, and neighbors. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, October 15th. Robert Jean Craig, Sibley. Robert Jean Bob Craig, 86, died Thursday, October 9th at his home surrounded by family. A celebration of life was held Saturday, October 11th at Angelo's in Columbia, Missouri. Burial followed on Wednesday, October 15th at Mount Hope Cemetery in Sibley. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the United Services Organization, the USO, and the Columbia Second Chance Animal Shelter. James P. Graham, Paxton. James P. Jim Graham, 98, of Paxton, died Wednesday, October 8th, surrounded by loved ones. A celebration of life was held Wednesday, October 15th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Paxton Buckley Loda Educational Foundation in Paxton. Jacob H. McMillan, Piper City. Jacob Howard McMillan, 34, of Piper City, died Monday, October 6th, as a result of an ATV accident. A celebration of his life will be at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to a memorial fund for the McMillan children at the Vermilion Valley Bank in Piper City, or a tree may be planted in his name. John Ruppert, Paxton. John Ruppert, 75, of Paxton, died Monday, October 6th, at his home, surrounded by family, following a battle with cancer. A private graveside service will be held at a later date at the Glen Cemetery in Paxton. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to his grandchildren's education fund. Rick A. Rogers, Paxton. Rick A. Rogers, 74, of Paxton, a 1970 Fisher High School graduate, died at his home Monday, October 6, 2025. No funeral arrangements are included in this obituary, but it does say donations in his honor can be made to the Sangamon Valley Fire Department or Seek and Find Ministries Chapel Cafe. Blanche C. Vasquez, Bethany. Blanche C. Vasquez, 69, of Bethany, formerly of Rantoul, died at 12:54 a.m., Sunday, October 12th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A mass of Christian burial will be at 1 p.m., Saturday, October 18th, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Paxton, with Father Nestor Sanchez officiating. Private burial will be at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Rantoul. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m., Friday, October 17th, at Bailey Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with rosary beginning at 4:30 p.m. Memorials may be made to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. And we'll return to the news with some stories from some of our local communities. From the Lota Village Board, the president. Park ordinance needs updates. Currently, very vague. Lota. Village President John Zalliker asked the village board during its monthly meeting on Wednesday, October 8th, to consider updating the village's park ordinance, noting it is currently very vague. We need to look at hours, behavior of adults and children, and consequences for ordinance violations, Zalliker told the trustees. In the meantime, trustees agreed with the suggestion to have surveillance cameras installed and better lighting at night, even though the village's park hours are dawn to dusk. In other business, the board set trick-and-treating hours for 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, October 31st. Zalliker said a resident started a pile of shingles on fire despite having previously been told that he could not burn them. The Iroquois County Sheriff's Office was called as there was a countywide burn effect in effect. Board approved spending up to $350 on new LED lighting at the front of the town hall. The existing bulbs are going bad, the board learned, and they were more costly to use, being vapor mercury lights. Trustee Sandy Zalliker, who serves as the village's animal control officer, suggested the village keep a dog book to help keep track of who owns which dogs in town in the event any get loosed. Zalliker said she would ask residents to send in photos of their dogs along with the dog's name and owner's name, phone number, and address. Trustee Sandy Coffey asked what the village would be doing with its new $27,000 mower that was purchased. When trustees had been told that the old mower was in bad shape, Zalliker said he had recently used it to mow grade alleys and haul gravel dirt with no problems. Coffey suggested seeing if the village could trade in the old mower for possibly a backhoe or a skid steer, and Zalliker said he would look into the possibility. Village treasurer Amanda Lovelace said there was some human error in water billing, but the issues are being straightened out. Lovelace also said the village's new website is ready to be launched, pending confirmation of where payments will go. And former town treasurer Miles Reck said a resident had dug into an alley to run a pipe. Reck said he planned to call the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to make a complaint. Zalliker said he would check into the situation. And from the village, Buckley Village Board, signatures on petition seeking ballot question reviewed. Buckley. Village Attorney George Quanzo told members of the Buckley Village Board during their monthly meeting on Monday, October 6th, that he was in the process of checking signatures on a petition that seeks to replace a referendum on the March 17th election ballot, asking local voters if they want to have a sanitary sewer system and treatment plant built in Buckley, as has been proposed. Quanzo said he was checking to make sure the signatures are from registered voters in Buckley. Quanzo noted he was having trouble reading some of the signatures. The board voted at a previous meeting to accept the low bid for the sewer project, but the bid expired October 1st. That means if the referendum were to pass to allow the project to proceed, trustees would need to redo the bidding process, likely with cost increases. If the referendum were to fail and the project cancel, the village would be required to pay back the $800,000 plus that has already been used from the previously awarded Illinois Environmental Protection Agency grant. In other business related to the project, trustees voted unanimously to authorize Village President Evan Scott Shockley to request $2,900 in IEPA grant funds for the treasurer and for the treasurer to pay the same amount to the Fair Graham engineering firm for the work it has already done on the project. And that is all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.